Welcome to Hyperlocal, a podcast dedicated to inspiring economic developers, job creators, and community champions. I'm your host, Mason Ainsworth. Howard Tam is a major foodie, and today we are going to explore down the rabbit hole of culinary tourism. We're going to talk about the best restaurants to eat at. We're going to talk about how food and economic development go hand in hand, not only to get you something good to eat, but also to get some more economic development happening within your community. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to share some exciting news. Hyperlocal just leveled up and is now supported by Storied Places Media, which specializes in producing audio and video podcasts for economic development organizations. Their all-inclusive packages are the way to go, because Storied Places will basically do everything for you, from providing a host that understands economic development to editing the episodes for you and even writing your social media posts. Or if you have a person or a team that wants to take the lead, Storied Places can fill in the gaps and keep them on track. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast but don't have the time or the know-how, now is the time to get started. And Storied Places Media can help. Learn more about their services and clients at storiedplaces.ca. Now, let's get into it. Howard, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on Hyperlocal today.
Really great to be here. Thanks for having me, Mason.
My absolute pleasure. So I know usually we hop right into the origin story, and trust me, we're going to get there. But I also had some fun little rapid style questions that a friend had sent to me in regards to food, because we're going to be talking about food and the food sector a little bit today. So just off the cuff, you got to pick one or the other, okay?
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so salty or sweet?
Salty.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Dine-in or takeout?
Dine-in.
Street food or fine dining?
Street food.
Early breakfast or a late night snack?
Depends on the context, but I do like both.
Okay, spicy food. Love it or
love
not
it.
So much? Love it. Me too. Me too. I'm a big fan of spicy. Dessert before or after dinner?
After.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Well, thank you so much. That was fun. Haven't done that before. So if folks are listening and they kind of like that, feel free to let us know. But now we will jump right into things. So Howard, I usually start off with folks with kind of their personal origin story. I find it's really interesting to hear where different folks are from, whether they're from economic development or another sector, and just get to know them a bit. And obviously, as we've kind of already established, you're a major foodie, mm-hmm. but you've also been a policy advisor at the Ministry of Infrastructure, to your role as a lecturer for the Urban Planning Studio courses at Toronto Metropolitan University, formerly Ryerson, and now the foodie in chief, or foodie in chef. Oh my goodness, that's so embarrassing. More food tours. What sparked your passion for food and economic development, and how did this journey that you've been on lead you to where you are today, kind of connecting those things together?
Yeah, I mean, I actually started my career as an urban planner. I went into that actually because I really loved cities. I loved cities, urban policy. I grew up in the suburbs, and so I actually always had this thing about like wanting to make the suburbs a better place, especially for younger people, right? Like teenagers or kids, right? Because growing up in the suburbs, I would have to get driven to places. I would have to ask people to drive me or find a ride, and it was always like either just to the mall or somebody else's house, and always wanted to improve that and find something, you know, a nice third place, right? A place that like people could hang out in and didn't require you to buy anything. So I went into urban planning with sort of those sort of mindsets and wanted to design and create spaces that really worked. And that actually led me to, oddly enough, my family's actually from Hong Kong, but I had never really spent a lot of time there, but it led me there because I really wanted to see urban planning up close in a very different context. And that I got. Like Hong Kong is, as many people describe it, as a kind of like a Blade Runner city. It's very high density, lots of like crazy infrastructure and some of the most efficient, you know, public transit in the world. And so it's a really interesting place to actually really study this topic and really learn about it. So I came back full of ideas. And that's actually when I started working for the government of Ontario. That's where the role of Ministry of Infrastructure came in. And it was not what I expected. And I kind of wanted to really do my own thing because a lot of the work that was going on there was very, I mean, obviously bureaucratic and very slow, as the reputation of government often is. But I really wanted to really get involved more in community and actually working more directly with community and really trying to come up with these solutions from the ground up. And so that's how I started doing work actually in public consultation, public engagement. That led me into the work as a lecturer for the Toronto Metropolitan University. What also you didn't mention was that I also did some time at the Rotman School of Management at the U of T, where I helped to lead a course called City Lab, where we actually looked at local economic development, especially with regards to small business. It was actually like a student consulting kind of studio course where the business students would come in and we try to connect them with actually a local economic development opportunity, be it working with the BIA or working with an actual small business to help them figure out some of their, you know, business fundamentals and how they can improve and better do what they're doing in terms of their mission and strategy. And so that's actually where like I started to connect some of these dots together and realized really like how important, first of all, like local economic development and community economic development really was to local neighborhoods and communities, but also really started to see how my urban planning lens kind of came into this, because like we talk a lot about community in urban planning. We talk a lot about how do we actually build things for neighborhoods and places and the people who live there. But the thread through all that too also is economic development, right? A neighborhood just isn't a neighborhood without its businesses, right? So in many respects, like that's actually where some of this started to come together for me. And one of the things I loved about being an urban planner was doing a lot of site visits, visiting neighborhoods and communities, learning about their story, really getting into talking to local people about like what really matters about this neighborhood and where do you go for, you know, the best food or, you know, the best like place to hang out, right? Best coffee shop, things like that. And that's when I started thinking about like food as one of these channels. So I lived in downtown Toronto for a few years and then I moved back to Scarborough around 2017. And at that time, Scarborough was just starting to come together, actually, with its story around food. So for many years, it had already been growing and developing and kind of people who knew. And I grew up in Scarborough, so I kind of was aware of the story, right? But it really didn't hit home until I moved back and started seeing all these like news articles popping up, right? Scarborough, best food suburb in the world, right? And a lot of my friends from the city would start asking me, hey, would you be interested in like showing me some restaurants in Scarborough? I wanted to learn about this food scene. And that's when I started discovering it a bit more and getting deeper into it. And over time, these like little tours I had with friends kind of started developing a life of its own. And that's kind of where Eat More Food Tours came from. We started doing these food tours because, yeah, there was actually like demand. And I was pleasantly surprised, actually, that people really wanted to see this. And I saw this as a, of course, an opportunity. And so we just started doing it as a bit of a hobby business initially, but it has grown now into a business that we work on full time.
That's incredible. And for any entrepreneurs out there or thinking about starting your own business, I highly recommend that. I think you set it out well as you took a passion that you had, got some friends together and then said, hey, like, this is pretty cool. Maybe we could turn this into something, did a little bit of work on it on the side and then turned it into an entire business that you're doing full time. I think that is phenomenal, Howard. So thank you for your commitment to entrepreneurship and to economic development and also to the food space as a big foodie myself.
Yeah, thank you. And obviously food is a big story these days here in Toronto, here in Scarborough. I would say probably every third business that opens is food or food related now. So it's definitely something that is capturing a lot of people's imagination. And all kinds of stories that go with that, you know, from professionals who start out in their own profession and then decide they want to run a food business, right? To people like creatives who have like really wonderful ideas for building amazing spaces for community, right? Starting food businesses. So lots of stuff to unpack there and really, really talk about.
I love it. And I think food has such a unique place in the world out of everything is when you come together and you know, quote unquote, break bread with somebody. I think that in itself is just such a special experience because you're in that situation. And if you look back, you know, throughout time, it's also a vulnerable situation, right? You're sitting there, you're eating, but you're also bonding with people. So I think the more we can eat together as people and we can share some of those experiences, the closer we're going to become as a society, which I really appreciate. And it comes to that importance mm-hmm. of place that you spoke to as well, and having those spaces for people to come together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So just before we hop to the next question, I did have a very nerdy question for you. I know you mentioned the Blade Runner city of Hong Kong. Have you watched the Blade Runners?
Yeah, I watched the old one, not the remake, but yeah.
Nice. Well, the classic is the classic, right? So
yes.
The new one was pretty good as well. But yeah, you can't beat the original, that's for sure. But anyways, getting back on track, Howard, eat more food tours. Let's talk about that a bit more in detail for folks who are not aware. I know you kind of told us a little bit about the journey, but I'm curious, you know, who's involved with that, what it does specifically, how that works for folks who are interested, and why it would be of interest to economic developers, whether that's in the GTA or whether that's elsewhere in Ontario or beyond.
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with what it does and how it works question. So we're a food tour company. We're involved in culinary tourism, which is the more broader industry that this falls in. And culinary tourism has been around for a while. I would say that it's definitely been much bigger in other places around the world historically. So think of, you know, your farm-to-table tours in Italy or your cuisine tours in Paris, right? Best French dining, things like that. And I think it's a category that has really only started to grow in Canada more recently. It's definitely still something that is quite new, I would say, even here in Toronto. Generally speaking, we've only ever seen like a few other organizations that even do this in Toronto. And so how it works is we take groups of people around to eat, literally. Our group sizes are anywhere from 5 to 25 people. We can go up to 30 as well if needed, but we think that the sweet spot is more in the 20 to 25 range. That allows us to really connect with folks. So there's a lot more opportunity to chat and talk and learn about different things. For our tours, we often bring out a lot of information about the restaurant. So we spend a lot of time actually researching and learning about this. And I'll get to that in a second. But we talk a little bit about the restaurant. We talk a little bit about the cuisine and the type of cuisine that we're having. We get a little bit into some of the history and the heritage behind the cuisine. And then as part of the tour itself, you get to sample the food. And then we'll go from stop to stop, usually about 4 stops on a tour, 3 savory, 1 sweet. And then by the end of it, you will have had more than enough food actually for a meal, plus probably some take home. And we order direct from the restaurants. Like we usually get like the sort of larger portion sizes, and we sort of pre-portion it out for each individual person. And of course, along the way, we'll do little like games and activities, right? So sometimes we have little scavenger hunts for people. Sometimes we have like quiz games, right? And a lot of it is really just to help people learn a little bit more about the neighborhood and the community that they're walking through. So if they're on the lookout for the gazebo, right, they'll be on the lookout for the gazebo, and we'll give a little prize for that. And so these are some of the little things that are part of the tour itself, the experience, and we really design that from top to bottom. So a lot of that goes into the sort of research side of it, as I mentioned before. So we actually try every restaurant before we take people there. I just think it's unethical if you don't. And so we spend time doing that. We call these the recons. So we actually go, we sample the food, we try out different dishes. Then we actually see if we want to talk to the owner about, like, if we really like the food, if we want to talk to the owner about the restaurant, the story of the restaurant, right? We try to start to learn a little bit about that. We talk to them about logistics, right? So we start to like think about, can this fit a group size that we're looking for? What about the washrooms? Is the restaurant accessible, right? So logistical considerations start to come into it. And then we'll start to think about how we might arrange the tour to come in here. Would we want one long table? Would we want a few scattered tables? Depending on the experience and the vibe of the restaurant, it really changes that quite a bit. And then we'll go to market, start to develop the tour, market it, create, you know, social media assets, and we do a lot of advertising on social media, mostly through Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And that's basically how we sort of bring this all to life. And in terms of like who's involved, like we work directly with the restaurants, as I just mentioned. We have an internal staff team comprised of our social media manager, admin staff, and an operations team that deals with the logistics behind the tours. So organizing, say, a bus if we need to get from one place to another that's a little bit further apart. Organizing the food. So getting somebody, for example, to work directly with the restaurants to make sure the order is on time, right? That delivery is happening, things like that. And so that all goes into like part of our operations process and development. And we train all of our staff to understand actually how that works. And in terms of what it means really for economic development, I think food tourism, I mean, because the food industry is growing so quickly and there's so much interest in food, I mean, you see it everywhere. You just log on to any social media channel, right? You've got foodie bloggers, influencers, all talking about their latest meal, trying to find the next best experience, right? You know, whether or not they're being sponsored or not, I mean, there is definitely deep interest in it. And a lot of these videos do get lots of likes, they go viral and things like that. And so I think I would say that in every community, there's always good food and there's always good food stories. And the point is, it doesn't have to be the world's best. In fact, even that's even like a subjective, I think, measure, right? Sometimes, because ultimately it's really up to the person tasting the food to determine whether or not it's the best. And I don't think that's really the point, the story here. The story is really about being able to talk about food as a community, to talk about like what makes the place and what makes the food great. And ultimately, from an economic development perspective, how do we connect that story to more people so that more people then want to patronize these particular places because of the story, right? Like storytelling is a really powerful tool. And really, ultimately, as food tour guides, our job here actually is to be the storyteller. We're actually helping to gather that story through the research process that we've done to share that story with as many people as possible who come on the tours. And through that, develop a relationship between the customer and the restaurant. And I'll say that like so many times we've seen people on our tours, because we do a lot of our tours in the suburbs, including in Scarborough, Markham. And when we bring people out on our tours, what's really crazy is that there are people who may have lived in Scarborough or may have lived in Toronto for years, and they'll come on our tours for the first time and we'll take them to a restaurant. They'll be like, I've driven by this place like probably 100 times. I never thought to stop here, but I'm definitely coming back because the food here is so good. And that's because, like, again, like many of these places don't look, quote, interesting. But the point is once you get connected into that story and once you get connected into that context and that environment, it completely changes your viewpoint about a particular place, an area, or a district, right? And that's actually what will bring people back and will continue to support these businesses long term. I'm pretty sure that like those people that we have connected with in that way will be going back to that restaurant multiple times.
I love that. And I think having those good food stories are so important, not only for the economy, but for just retention of people who are coming to your establishment. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, on the positive note, but also on the negative side, like a bad story at a restaurant can, you know, be shared 1,000 times. I can think of examples where I've had a, you know, really negative experience at a place. And, you know, you go and you tell all your friends, well, it's the same thing reversed. If you go someplace and you go, oh yeah, like we went on this sweet tour and we met these really amazing people and we went to these different restaurants. And did you know that the person who has this restaurant is like, you know, third generation running the restaurant and it's been in their family for this long and there's this specific item that they make. And that actually traces all the way back to like their home in this other country. And like just little things like that are so cool compared to just going in and ordering something and then you get the food given to you and no one really says anything. So I think building that story in just makes it more exciting and really is part of that experience. And I think story and experience are very much, you know, hand in hand. And I always heard, you know, not to go too dark, but when you die eventually, and people always ask, oh, you know, well, what are people going to think of me? And there's a ton of studies out there and they really show that they're not so much remembering like, oh yeah, you were super successful in business or you did this or you won this award. It's how did this person make me feel? And I think it's the same thing with restaurants and with food is, you know, the food, it, you know, obviously you want it to be good tasting and you want it to be great, but it's also, do you feel good when you go to this place? And I think of some of my favorite restaurants over time and yeah, the food was awesome, but also it was the conversations I had with the owners or the way the staff made me feel or how, you know, me and my friends got treated and things like that. So I think you're right on the ball with this.
Yeah. And I think like nowhere does that pop up so obviously than in social media, where, I mean, like the story of the place, the story of the owner, the story of the person can really elevate a restaurant status, right? You see it happening all the time. all across different channels and mediums, but like it is something that really like changes. And it'll be funny because like sometimes you'll even hear like, you know, someone come back from one of those places and be like, yeah, the food was okay, but I got to meet the owner and like, you know, that person was really cool, you know?
Yeah, 100%, absolutely. So I know we've talked a bit about culinary tourism and food tourism a bit in the food sector. I'm curious, outside of your business directly, what are you hearing that's going on out there in kind of the broader like Ontario or elsewhere from different folks in the food industry?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the broader industry, I mean, I think we've all seen the headlines, you know, restaurants are suffering. There's definitely like a downturn. Folks are eating out less because of the economic conditions and climate. I would say that like within the kind of restaurants that we're dealing with, a lot of times we do hear that story. We do hear it's getting tough. Expenses are going up. We have to raise our prices. That's definitely part of it. But also I wanted to bring the perspective of, so it sometimes depends also on what community you're actually serving and actually what is it that you're selling in terms of food, right? Because what's really interesting is that like in places like Toronto suburbs, where it's very multicultural and there's restaurants that cater to all kinds of tastes, and it even gets down to the very like very specific, right? So there's a restaurant that you go to, for example, that serves not just Indian food, they serve Hyderabadi breakfast items, right? It's very specific.
Hyderabadi breakfast items?
Yes.
Please explain.
So Hyderabad is a city in India. It's in South Central India. I've never been there myself, but from what the owner tells me, there's like a really big thing about breakfast street food. It's a very common thing there, and people will, you know, go and like line up for it, things like that. And so we tried to bring that concept here to Toronto. And he opened a restaurant that's very specifically selling these kinds of street food items. And from what I can tell, he's doing very well, even right now. And I think it's because of the specificity of what he's trying to do. Like, because we now have a community that's large enough to support that, right? There's enough people from Hyderabad or who have tried that kind of food before, who then want to actually seek out a restaurant or a place that's actually serving it. And he might be like one of like, you know, four in the entire city, right? So that's what I'm saying. It really depends, right? It depends on what you're doing and what you're trying to serve. If it gets to a certain level where it's serving a very specific community or a very specific need, I do see there actually is quite a bit of actual growth and development in those worlds. But also like in other places, I can also see that there are people who have had a really rough time. And so I think with many economic development stories, it's not a one size fits all story. But in general, though, I think, though, that the rising costs of doing business are taking a bite out of everyone's pocket. And that's something that I think we need to really like think about, especially from, a policy perspective. In many of the inner suburbs in Toronto, we do also have this challenge around redevelopment, which is causing displacement, gentrification, right? Because rents go up once the new building comes in, that sort of thing. And that's something I think that like from a policy perspective, we could work a little bit more on is how do we actually ensure that there continues to be affordable spaces? Because also for new entrants into the marketplace, like somebody who wants to start the next Hyderabadi breakfast food joint, right? Where would they go actually to be able to actually start up their venture, especially if they don't have a lot of capital? So there is something to be said about how do we actually create that and create programs and supports to actually continue to develop that into the future.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for explaining that. I'm definitely excited to line up in the future and get some breakfast street food. That sounds right up my alley. And yeah, it's an interesting place out there right now. So we're going to just park policy for a second, because I am going to loop back to that because I did have a question for you in that area. But I know you talked a bit about collaboration, and obviously collaboration is the key to success in economic development. We really thrive on those partnerships. I'm curious if you can share a story with us of a successful collaboration that stands out in your mind that could be with a municipality and maybe the culinary sector, or a business maybe that you've partnered with in the past, and how kind of working together led to something positive.
Yeah, I'll talk about actually like two ones really quickly. So one of our longest standing partnerships has been with an organization called Scarborough Arts. Here in Toronto, they're known as local arts service organizations. So they're partially funded by the city. And the idea is that they help to develop community arts outside of the downtown core. So Scarborough Arts has been around actually since the 1970s. And part of what they see is that, you know, art covers all different aspects, including culinary arts. And so we've been working with them for a number of years now in a partnership where we work on sort of combining art and food together as part of a food tour. And we've run many series of these tours over the years, including one of our actually best-selling tours called the Night Tour, where we actually visit. So in the suburbs of Toronto, there are many of these what we call night plazas. They're places where you can really go that really liven up actually after dark. It's very much like kind of a culture from abroad in the sense that if you think about like night markets in Asia or night markets in South Asia, right? That's the kind of vibe that these plazas really sort of bring out at night. And so you'll see a lot of like late night, you know, bubble tea or kebabs or chai bars and things like that. Lights are all on, it's bright, neon signs everywhere. And there's lots of people mulling about in the parking lot, right? And so with this tour, we take people out to see some of these sites in Scarborough. And they've been one of our best-selling tours for like 3 years running. And part of it is to kind of like talk about the art of nightlife culture and night culture and where that comes from, and trying to actually imbue also like a sense of like participatory artwork. So we'll encourage people to do chalk murals on the side of a wall, right? That's all part of it. And it's really just like, again, trying to connect the dots between art, culture, food, right? And it's been a very successful partnership, I would say, with Scarborough Arts in that sense. We've definitely been able to help the organization connect more outside of the more traditional artist communities. We've, I think, been able to help people who come on the tours see that art is alive and well all across, you know, the suburbs. And it may not be in the same ways that you would see them maybe in an urban center, but like public art and displays of art are happening everywhere. And I think that it helps also connect the dots around sort of how this then translates into culture and what makes the cultures of communities come to life. So that's the first one. And then the other partnership I'll talk about is one we did with the BIA. So last year, we actually had the really great privilege of working with the Downtown Yonge Business Improvement Area. It's one of the largest BIAs in the country in terms of their budget and, you know, the kind of property owners that are part of their BIA. So this, for example, it actually includes the Eaton Center as one of their property members. And we worked with them on a series of food tours to discover food in their community in the central core of Toronto. And they actually offered to sponsor pretty much most of the tours. So we were able to offer them for an amazing $10, really, to the community. And really, it was just seen as more of a larger community benefit to promote the businesses, to promote local food. And so we really like researched and kind of dug up like restaurants that like even the BIA team wasn't fully familiar with. But we were able to really like help people see that like there's actually good food to be discovered in this neighborhood. Which traditionally was known more for, I think, fast food chains and, you know, not necessarily, you know, good, authentic local dining. So, yeah, we delivered those tours and it was like a huge success. We saw that like a lot of the businesses, many of whom who may not have actually traditionally engaged with the BIA, actually coming out and wanting to be a part of this, to the point where there was actually more sort of requests from the businesses than there actually was in terms of numbers of tours we could deliver to feature all of them. And it drove a lot of people and it got a lot more people aware of what the BIA was doing and with some of the businesses and activities in the neighborhood. So I think it was a major win for us and for them to be able to create this sense of larger community development, right, happening right in our downtown core.
Beautiful. I love that. And that's such a great example of partnerships and collaboration across different industries and such. I know we've talked in a few episodes about BIAs on the podcast now, and we've had Rachel from OBIA, which was great. But yeah, all of these things interconnect. So the more we can get together and support each other, the more we can support our communities, which I think is phenomenal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we'd love to continue to do those sorts of partnerships. We do have some potential ones also with some DMOs, so destination marketing organizations, and also with some other BIAs in Toronto as well.
Congratulations. That's awesome to hear. So Howard, I said I'd loop back to policy, and we definitely are about to. Advice for economic developers.
For someone in economic development, what policies or programs do you think would help support their culinary tourism sector in their community?
Yeah, I mean, I think, not to sound broken record here, but I think food tourism is actually really one really great starting point. I mean, it does require a bit of work to set up, and it does require a little bit of time sort of to, you know, get it right. And also in terms of like building kind of awareness and kind of like a market demand for, you know, people wanting to do something like that. But I think that is one very direct way that you can actually build relationships between restaurants and customers. And I think that's really the key here is to, like, I think especially with food, which is something that's so personal and so visceral, right? It's important, I think, to really think about that relationship beyond just a simple transaction of I go to you, you give me food, I give you money. It's a little bit, I think, beyond that, because I think also at this, especially at this time too, and we see it and we hear it everywhere, right? Like, obviously, like the economy isn't doing great, so that's causing a lot of anxiety. The politics of our world is causing a lot of anxiety, but also like we've heard of, you know, loneliness is a big problem. Right. A lot of people feel lonely, or, you know, they live alone, or they feel like they don't have anyone that they can connect with, right? So I think like even providing an opportunity for someone to have a relationship with a restaurant, with an owner, with a server, that really helps, especially if we're talking about trying to build sort of a relationship, you know, to improve the economy too and improve sort of food businesses. I think that the storytelling piece is a really great tool to actually help with that. And I think like the difference between sort of telling a story, just like say, putting up a website with like, here's like five restaurants in our area and here's their sort of written story. The difference between being able to read that and go, ah, versus being able to experience that and go, oh, right. I think that actually is what, to me, makes sort of food tourism as an aspect really stand out as a way to actually help build that connection through experience for a particular customer or client. Also, like, as I mentioned before, I think finding ways to support food entrepreneurs, I think, would be really helpful. So again, more affordable startup spaces, you know, kitchens, things like that. I've seen many models of this around Canada, but like the idea of even just like a shared kitchen facility, like say in a mini food court with like three or four different vendors, right? That could really help to cut down costs. I think like models like that are really cool. One of the more, I think, fascinating ones are from East Asia. So in Hong Kong and in Singapore, there are these government-owned food courts, cooked food centers or hawker centers. That exist where the rent is very low. It's a publicly owned facility. And the point is that it's a place really that you can get really affordable meals. Government sees it as a way, like a government support in a way, right? To be able to provide more affordable food for the local population. And so many businesses do start out in these places and eventually move out and develop into a more traditional brick and mortar store. And I think, especially at this time, like thinking about, yeah, like what can we do directly to really help encourage more people to dine out. More programs like, you know, the Licious Festivals or food festivals would be really good. And also designing them so that they fit with different kinds of cuisines, because not all restaurants can do the three-course meal. So there's definitely, I think, a ways to support that or to design those programs to really fit with that. One other piece that I want to give a shout out to is one of our other partners that we worked with is a group called Plaza Pops right here in Toronto. Basically, what they did was they set up these outdoor patio places, really beautiful patio spots, by the way, that were fabricated and designed with the community in terms of like the kinds of features that they would have and in terms of the sort of the artistic components that they would have. And they popped these up in strip plazas in the suburbs. So one of the challenges of any suburban communities is, as I mentioned, third spaces are hard to find, especially, again, third spaces don't require you to buy something. And so they managed to be able to talk to strip plaza owners in places like Scarborough and in Etobicoke to give up a little bit of their parking lot to be able to install a pop-up public space. So with planters, with benches, tables, right? A little bit of shade, right? For the summertime. These were usually taken down. They were set up in the spring. They'd be taken down in the fall. But the idea really is that it provides that extra space. And they found that it was actually a really important space because now people had a new place to hang out. They would be able to buy food from the plaza, take it outside, eat in a patio, especially where restaurants didn't have their own patio, right? Eat in the patio, hang out with their friends, right? chat for hours. And again, like if you don't want to buy anything, you don't have to, you can just sit there and enjoy it. And I really wanted to like highlight that also as a policy tool to think about, especially in suburban communities where there aren't necessarily like the traditional main streets that we think about, where there's a lot of parking lots, there's a lot of empty space. And so this is a tool I think that really can help with encouraging people to stay longer in some of these places that are meant to be driven to and driven out of. Like we could actually really start to create, I think, little pockets of public spaces and really develop the placemaking ability of some of these plazas as these potential third spaces. And again, just in that way, encourage people to patronize the businesses more.
I love that. That's super exciting. And what a cool idea. Howard, what's missing? Is there anything we didn't talk about today that would be of interest to our listeners?
Yeah, I think to the point about good food in every community, just to kind of point out again, I think there's good food in every community. We're really good at finding them, but also just like, I would say to economic developers and to community developers everywhere, don't be afraid to actually try doing food tourism in your neighborhood. Like, I know there's always this fear that like, oh, we don't have the best restaurants, those are all downtown or something like that. There's always a way you can tell that story and tell it in an authentic way and in a way that really connects with people, that brings people in, right? Because I'd love to see culinary tourism be a part of actually every community in Canada. I think there's a huge potential for it. We have a really amazing and fascinating food history, food culture from all the different cultures that have come to Canada, and including our Indigenous culture that's been here for generations, right? There is a lot of opportunity to tell that story in a much more vibrant and engaging way. And I think like culinary tourism is one way to get that started and also help people really understand cross-cultural differences, understand also what connects us together as people. Like as an example of that, one story we always mention on all of our tours is have you ever noticed that every culture has like something that's like a dumpling? Basically something wrapped in dough. It's a very common thing. And that's no coincidence, right? It's because we as like humans are so connected together in the sense that wherever we travel, we bring our food with us. We bring our recipes with us. We may need to modify, we may need to change it, right? But the point really is that there's so much in food that actually brings us closer together, literally, and helps us really understand where we're all coming from, that I think it's a really great way to, again, use it as a tool to talk about not just supporting our restaurants, but talking about community, talking about culture, and talking about what makes our neighborhood a great place to share stories.
I love it. And make sure you folks who are listening, you get out there and you try it. Tell that story and bring those people together because everybody's got a dumpling. I love that. And I just have a couple questions left for you before we close off, Howard. We have a mystery question from one of our former MEDI, the Ambassadors of Economic Development and Innovation at the University of Waterloo, Janet Song. So thank you so much, Janet, for the question. The question is, which moment with a local restaurant or business made you realize this work was bigger than just doing tours?
Yeah, I would say it was probably a couple of years ago. We had one lady, she's a bit elderly, I'd say she was probably in about her 60s. She came to actually 4 tours of ours in a row. She signed up and came again and again and again. And we kept seeing her name on the registration list and we'd be like, oh, cool, you know, she's coming again. This is so cool. And by the 4th tour, I just kind of asked her, like, thanks for coming to all these tours. What brought you out to so many tours? We love it, but like, yeah, just curious, right? Was it like our advertising, you know? Was it me, you know, dancing on Instagram that got you out here? Was it the food, right? And she said something that really touched my heart and really made me think a lot more about the impact of these tours. And she said, well, you know, I'm elderly and I live alone. I often dine alone. And this is really an opportunity for me to get out and eat with other people. And I really value that. And it was just one of those moments where like, I just was like, wow. Like I actually didn't really have a direct response at that moment because I was just really appreciating that. And also, as we mentioned before, talked a little bit about the loneliness epidemic, right? Like that's when it came home to me as well, but like how important this is actually for people to find community, for people to find each other. And just seeing, that impact, like even at that very individualized level, was something that really just struck me as like, yeah, this is why we do need to keep doing this. Is because we can help with alleviating somebody's loneliness. That's great. Yeah.
Beautiful. I think that's wonderful and really shows some of the root there and the loneliness epidemic, especially after COVID, obviously. Something that was there, I think, before, but really got amplified as a result of that. And I think we're seeing a lot of the repercussions of such things now. So it's so important to have opportunities to bring people together, to have those shared spaces, to have opportunities where somebody can do something as simple as just eat with somebody and have a conversation. I think that really builds a stronger community. And I'm so glad that they decided to share that story with you.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And I'll just say this one last piece too, is that like, I think when I first got into like policy work, I always thought about impact from that sort of macro level of like, hey, we can change this policy and it'll benefit like thousands of people. And I still believe in that. It's not to say I don't. It's just that it was stories like this and also seeing people go to restaurants for the first time and, you know, that eyes closed, head nodding moment where they're like, that this is so good, right? Like, and seeing that, like, you know, you can deliver that impact and that change at that such individual level. That was like a moment for me too, to realize just like how important it is both to be on the ground and delivering that individual person to person change as much as it is at that policy level, doing that like macro change. Just as a personal note of like how I started to come to see where impact is actually happening.
Awesome. So Howard, I've got one last question for you. How do people book a tour and how do they get in touch with you if they're interested in setting up a tour in their community?
Yeah, so you can just go to our website. It's eatmorescarborough.com. Our business originally started as Eat More Scarborough Food Tours. Now we're Eat More Food Tours because we do stuff outside of Scarborough. But eatmorescarborough.com is still our original website where you can book tours with us, Scarborough or not. So you send us an email if you want to book a private tour with us. If you want to check out our tour schedule, that will be posted. There's a link to our tour schedule on the website. You can book through there. All of our tours you can book online and register with us directly. You can also follow us on Instagram. Eat More Scarborough is our handle, as well as on LinkedIn. And you can also sign up for our newsletter also through the website so that you can get informed of all the latest tours and events that are happening.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Howard. I can't wait to see you dancing on Instagram, so I will make sure to check that out.
Yes.
But in all seriousness, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with us today. And hopefully we've inspired some other people to share what's going on in their community.
Yeah, no, I hope this is helpful for folks. And all I will say is I hope you get a chance to get out there and enjoy your local restaurants and keep eating well.
Thanks for being a part of the conversation. If you enjoyed this episode of Hyperlocal, share it with a colleague or on LinkedIn and tag us. Every share helps us connect with more economic developers and continue telling these important local stories.